week we're going to read Parshas Yisro, which is a parsha of Matan Torah. And one of the main Gemaras, Agadotas, about Matan Torah is whether or not the Torah belongs to man. Maybe it belongs to the Malachi Asharis. This is a Gemara in Shabbos. In the famous Agadotah on Pei Ches on the Beis, on Rav Yeshua ben Levi, B'shosh Sha'ola Moshe Lamorom, when Moshe Rabbeinu climbed up to the Shamayim to receive the Torah, he had a problem. He had some adversaries, some competitors. Amru Malachi Ashores, the Malachim declared, Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Mal Yelud Isha Beinenu. What role, what place does a mortal man, finite man, who's born to flesh and blood, born to a woman, what's he doing up here in Shamayim? Amar lehem likabel Torah. But he came here to receive the Torah. Amar lefanav. Chemda gnuza sheganza lechot shameos v'shivim v'arboim doros. This is a great treasure that has been waiting for 970 generations. Kodim Shenivra Olam, even before the creation of the world, V'yata Mevakesh Lidna Lebosar V'dav, and you intend to give it to flesh and blood, finite man, Ma Enosh Ki Tizkerenu. At this point, the Malachim quote a perek in Tehillim, perek Ches, which you'll see here, it's Lamanatzeach Alagita Ismizmo L'David, that's number 2 on your page. And it says, Ma Adir Shimcha B'chola Aretz, how great and how grandiose is the name of God in the land, Asher Tino Hodcha Al Shamayim. You should leave your Hod, which is the glory of Hashem, a reference to His Torah, up in Shamayim. And later on, in the same capital, it says, Ma Enosh Kisis Kredo, who is man that you would make, you know, recognize his existence? Uben Adam Kisif Kedenu, and the human being that you designated here to accept the Torah. And they go on and say, Hashem Adonenu Ma Adir Shimcha B'chola Aretz, which is the beginning of this capital, Asher Tno Hodcha Al Shamayim. The Torah should be left here in Shamayim. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Hechzilem Tshuva. HaKadosh Baruch wanted Moshe to engage in a dialogue, a debate with the Malachim, give them an answer to their argument. Amar Lefanav. So Moshe declares, Ribono Shel Olam, Misyari Ani Shami Yasrifenu Behevel Shel Bepiyem. I'm afraid of the angels. You know, it was a very awesome kind of experience to be surrounded by the angels who were attacking him. Maybe they'll burn me up alive. Amalo, Achoz Bekise HaKavod, hold on to the royal throne, the divine throne of God. V'achzilem Tshuva, give them an answer. Shenemar, and he quotes a pasuk that if man holds on to the Kise HaKavod, then the Ananim, then the divine clouds will protect him. V'yomer Rav Nachum, Melamed Shepiresh, Shakai Miziv Shchinoso. V'ananu olav. Okay, fine. Now this is the point we want to get to. Amar lefanav. Here's where Moshe Rabbeinu offers his counter argument against the Malachi Asharis. Ribono Shel Olam, Torah shatanosim li ma kosuv bo. What does it say in the Torah? Anochi Hashem Elokecha asher tzaseicha me'eretz Mitzrayim. God identifies himself as he who took the people out of Mitzrayim. Amar lehem. He turns to the Malach and he says, Mitzrayim yiradetem? Lefaro ishtabadetem? In other words, the words of the Torah are not relevant to the Malach. I obviously address human man that was subject and subservient to Paro in Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu goes on, Torah, Ma tehe lochem? Lomo tehe lochem? Why should the Torah be yours? It says in the Torah, Lo yilucha lohim acherim. You should not have other gods. Bein amim atem shriim. Do you live in the influence of other nations? Sha'ovdim avodas galilim, that are idol worshippers, and you might be influenced and tempted to worship idols. The angels live in the heavenly spheres. They're not tempted by the idol worshippers. Shuv maksiv ba'zacharis yom shabbos l'kachuk. Kluma atem osim malacha. are you engaged? Are you busy the whole week long, occupied in melacha? Shatem tzrichim Shabbos. You need a day of Shavuos. Shumaksi bolotisa. It says you're not allowed to get involved in using God's name in vain. Is maso matnyesh beinechem. You know, sometimes when you deal with other people, you take an oath, or you take, you know, you say something that takes God's name in vain. Do you have a father? Do you have a mother? Lo tirtzach, lo tinov, lo tignov. Why would the malachim need these averos of ritzicha, of niuf, and gneva? Kina yesh beinechem. Is there some sort of jealousy amongst you that you would have to be commanded by God not to murder someone? Yetzahara yesh beinechem. Do you have any sort of desire for lust that you would violate the iser of adultery? And therefore, hodulo lakodesh baruch. Miyad hodulo lakodesh baruch. After Moshe Rabbeinu presented these arguments, they backed down. They admitted that the Torah has to be given to man. Shenemar, Hashem Adoneinu Mo'adir Shimcha. At the end of this capital, it says Mo'adir Shimcha bechol ha'aretz. Bechol ha'aretz means down here on this world. So what it says in the opening chat, in the opening verse of this chapter, Mo'adir Shimcha. I'm sorry, what it says Tna Hodchal Shemayim now becomes Mo'adir Shimcha Bechol Ha'aretz. So the Beis HaLevi, do you know, David, who the Beis HaLevi was? His name was the same name as my Rebbe. He was my Rebbe's great grandfather, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. And he wrote Tshuvas, he wrote Chidushim, Insights. He also wrote a very popular, often quoted commentary on the Torah called the Beis HaLevi. And in Parshas Yisro, which you're going to read in Mirtzah this week, he says, Lahavin Ha'inyon Damalachim. Let's try to understand. What was the interest here? What was the claim of the angels? You know, we understand how Moshe Rabbeinu counter-argued against them, but what were the angels thinking? They were also intelligent beings. The Bikshu She'itei Lem Torah, they were asking for the Torah, but Chisalka Daitach, did they have any sort of Havamina Shehem Yikaimu as a mitzvah Shabbat, that they would be commanded to fulfill these mitzvahs? Vare Ruba, most of the mitzvahs, and Tluy Maguf, they have to be implemented by the physical body. And not only that, you know, even the mitzvahs that are not totally in the body, certainly angels don't have physical bodies, but even the intellectual mitzvahs, you know, the mitzvahs of machshava and lev and ava and so on, it's very odd to assume that they have any sort of temptation. You know, they see the divine glory on a daily basis, right? They're the ones who sing kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. Why would they need these mitzvahs? And here I would press the return button. This is a new paragraph. Rak, but rather you have to reinterpret this whole debate in the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos. Ha'inyan, da ha-Torah nechlekes l'shtayin. There are two parts of the Torah. There's Torah Shebichsav and there's Torah Shebalpeh. V'ikar ha-Torah Shebalpeh hu ha-klolim v'amidos Shatorah Nidreshes Bahem, the main rules and regulations that govern the oral law are the hermeneutic principles by which we interpret the words of the Torah. Vayideya klolim vamidos, through these various midos, these methods by which we interpret the Torah, mispareshes haTorah shebichsav v'nischadish bo chidushei dinim u'pratim li'ein sof. What we're able to do through Torah Shebaal Peh by applying these methods, these rules of Midos HaTorah and Dresh Peh, we're able to derive and clarify dinim, halachas, and pratim, and details. We ain't so endless. The Arucha Meretz Midah, it's as wide and as deep as the land itself. V'zeu Sha'omar HaKosav, this is a pasuk in Tanakh, it says Hashem Yitain Omer. So the first part of the pasuk, Hashem Yitain Omer, God enunciates and formulates words and sentences. That's a reference to Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah. But Hamavasros Sova Rav, that give rise to a great myriad of interpretations. He says those are the drushes of Torah Shebaal Peh. So you have the first part of the pasuk of Ki Yitein Omer. That's a reference to Torah Shebichsav, and the second part of the pasuk is a reference to the myriad details, the endless amount of details in Torah Shebaal Peh, Kama Pratim, Drushos Upratim. Umikra Echad, you can have one pasuk, Yotze Lekama Taimim, and it could give us many different principles and rules. Vatorah Nitna LeYisrael, and at Maimed Har Sinai, the Torah was given to Klal Yisrael. What does that mean? It was the authority and the power to give, to interpret the Torah, that was given to Klal Yisrael. Haim Hayu Haim Darshanosa. They were given the rules and the principles by which they can analyze the Torah Shebichsav, and Darshan meaning to interpret the Torah, derive halachas from the Torah, Kefi Shehem Maskimen. And it all depends upon the way the Chachmei Yisrael, the wise people of Israel, would decide. Right? If they decide that Muktzah is Asur, so the Muktzah is Asur. Mm-hmm. Right? That's Torah Shebaal Peh. Al Pi HaKlolin, based on the rules that they were given. Kainahu Ha'emes. And then, once they have an agreement amongst them, that becomes truth. That becomes Torah itself. And here the Beis HaLevi alludes to a sugya in Bava Metzia, a famous Gemara called Tanur Shel Achnoi. Have you ever heard of it?
Sure.
And there is a debate between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, about the status of this particular oven, whether it's Makabel Tuma or it's not Makabel Tuma. Apparently it was made up of different parts, but yet it was still anchored in the ground. So the question is it considered a Kli? Is it considered Mechubel Lekarka? And Rabbi Elazar said that I'm right, and I'll prove to you that I'm right. And he invokes all sorts of heavenly voices and heavenly miracles. He moves the water upstream, and he moves the walls of the base medrash and so on to prove that up in Shamayim, in the divine celestial world, they pass and they accept Rabbi Elazar's opinion. And yet the Gemara rejects it. Why? Because lo ba Shamayim. The Torah is given to Chachmei Yisrael. They are invested with the authority to interpret the Torah, and it's already given. It's given as a gift to Klal Yisrael. It's no longer in Shamayim. Shamayim has, so to speak, left. Given over the reins over Torah to Chachmei Yisrael, and therefore Torah is to be interpreted based on Askomas Bezdin down here on this world, in the finite world. Oh, if that be the case, now we can begin to understand what bothered the Malachim. What were their claim? Obviously, they didn't claim that the Torah was given to them in the sense of the mitzvahs and all the mandates were imposed upon them. They don't. They're shayach to the mitzvahs. But what they wanted was Torah Shebaal Peh. What do they mean? They wanted the reins of Torah Shebaal Peh. They wanted the authority of Torah Shebaal Peh. Sheratzah Malachim Bikshu Sheitei Lema Torah. The Lola Adam, the Emes Moshe Haim Yidrashua. They wanted the truth of the Torah to be established by their interpretation. Meaning the Malachim should be the Balabatim, should be the controllers and the final authority on interpreting the Torah. The Zeo Masha Amru, Ma Enosh Kisis Karetim Ben Unvikitiv Kedeno. They declared, why do you recognize man, physical, limited, finite man, to interpret your great infinite Torah? Ain all of them can die. Man is not worthy enough. Shetizkar Oso Klali to remember him and give him the authority, hand over the reins to him. Af Kilim Noso Lipakid Ulamamuna. Why do you mean it means to appoint? To appoint an agent? Why do you appoint them as the agents to interpret the Torah? Is Tavshilu B'maisi Yodecha? You want to give them control of the creation of your Torah? Kol Shata Tachas Raglov Shasiso Sones L'Moshel. The Torah belongs to us. So the battle over the Torah was not about the mitzvahs of Torah, according to Beis HaLevi, but rather about the authority to interpret the Torah. The Malachim refused to recognize man's ability to serve that great function, that glorious authority, to be authorized to interpret the Torah. They felt tnu hotcha Ala Shamay. And this is really fascinating, because what this Beis HaLevi gives us is a whole new approach to this great debate. And Hashem finally paskins, no, I'm giving the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Beis HaLevi at this point hasn't clarified exactly why, but apparently his approach is that since the mitzvahs belong to man, and all the commands and the temptations to violate the commands belong to the challenge of man, so far as man is a finite being, so man is the appropriate agent to interpret the Torah.
You just wonder what the angel system had in mind, like that we have the Torah, but we somehow ask them how to interpret it. And how would that work, you know?
You mean in the Havamin, according to their claim?
Yeah, would there just be a bus call every time?
Right, we don't know how to interpret anything in Torah Shebichsav. The Malachim will gather together, and they'll use their, you know, divine and lofty wisdom to interpret the law and tell us things. They're going to write the Shulchan Aruch for us.
Right.
The Malachim are going to formulate the codes and tell us how to live the law, how to live the Torah, what we're obligated to do, what we're not.
Which they tried to do anyway, no? Yosef Karo had a little Malach helping out day and night.
I hear your question. Yeah, I would say
they got their 2 cents worth in there.
Yeah. Right. But still Lo Bashamayim, meaning, you know, Rabbi Yosef Karo would have to be convinced based on his halachic thinking. There's no extra value or authority to the Malach. Even Navi, by the way, even though he's a great prophet, he doesn't have the authority to interpret the law. He can tell us what's going to happen in the future. He can give us commands from God on a temporary basis. But the Torah per se is not given to the Nevi'im to interpret. It's given to the Chachmei Yisrael. Now, very often the Nevi'im were a Chachmei Yisrael. If you go through the Rambam's, you know, 40 generations leading up to Ravina, Rav Ashi, and Rav Yoshia, you'll see that amongst the list there are many Nevi'im that sat on a bez, but it's not the Torah's Navi. It's not because you're a prophet that you interpret the Torah. Prophecy is very good for certain things, you know, tell us how to live our lives in the situations that arise, but as far as the Torah per se, that's not given to prophecy. Lo b'Shamayim.
But Shamayim didn't let go of the reins completely. You know, they're still kind of, you know, pushing us in certain directions.
I'm not sure what you have in mind. Again, if you're talking about the Malach who came to Rabbi Yosef Karo, once again, I insist that there's no authority to that Malach. You know, he may have engaged the mind of Rabbi Yosef Karo, but
that sits on the Kohen's head. The
none of this has any relevance, any bearing on interpreting the Torah. All the drashas of Chazal are given to the Chachmei Yisrael, and they will darshan and they will interpret. You need to finally get a haskar, so it means that you'll have difference of opinion. That's because through the generations we lost the original tradition in many ways. So it's hard to determine and, you know, weave through all the controversies.
I think right now we might like a little bit more of input from Shemayim, no? Because we've had such a
Chas v'shalom. No, not at all, David.
You
not
have
at all. No input
confusion
from Shemayim. No, it's our job. We have to do it. Yiftach b'dorek yishmu b'dorek. Every generation has its Chachmei Yisrael. They have to interpret the law. I'm not interested in what the Malachim have to say. Show me a Malach here. Let him sit down in the chair. I'm not going to ask him his opinion. Again, if he wants to engage me in discussion, I won't throw him out of Shia, you know, if he can challenge my mind. But in terms of how to interpret the halacha, no, he's a nobody. With all due respect, but he's not, I'm not interested in halacha. In fact, they say about the Gaon that he refused to meet with these malachim. He wanted to sweat it out on his own. Okay, Rabbi Yosef Karo maybe wanted to hear what the malachim have to say, the Magid Meisharim, you know, engage him into it different. But ultimately, it's the Chachmei Yisrael. That's why the paradigm example of the power and the authority of Chachmei Yisrael is Kiddush HaKodesh. Because halacha is that if Bezin on Makadish the Chodesh, which determines when Yontov is going to come out, even if they made a toast, even if they made a mistake, it's binding. Because they went ahead and they were Makadish based on their analysis. Now, based on this phrase of, you know, the Malach Asharit. You see, I just want to point out one thing before we go on. What boggles, what confuses my mind about the Beis HaLevi is you get the impression that Moshe Rabbeinu's argument against the Malachim was based on the irrelevancy of the Torah to the Malachi Asharis. Meaning, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, obviously Hashem is addressing, you know, human beings, flesh and blood, that are, were enslaved by Paro. Correct? Ani Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzeisicha, I liberated you from Mitzrayim. So who's God addressing? But again, the issue according to the Beis HaLevi was never who's God addressing. At the end of the day, the Malachim are Modeh v'Peh Moleh, that the Torah has to be given to Klal Yisrael to implement the Torah. They, Klal Yisrael, are faced with all these challenges. But what the Malachim wanted to do was interpret the Torah. So how does Moshe Rabbeinu's argument, well, there's no kin amongst you, you don't have jealousy. So that part I can understand. Maybe if the Malachim don't have jealousy, they really don't understand the depths of the Torah. Only man who experiences these challenges, you know, he faces the challenge of kinna. He knows what it means that if you want to disagree with your parents, you know, and so on, and how to reach the level of kavod.
But we ultimately have to live by the rules of the Chachamim decide based on their interpretations.
But I'm saying
angels don't have to live by whatever the Chachamim decide.
Right. So that's, I can begin to understand why it's the Chachamim should be granted the ability to interpret the Torah. They very much live in this world, the finite world. But the original argument of Moshe Rabbeinu was Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzeisicha Eretz Mitzrayim. Klum leparo ishtabadetem, you malachim were never meshuva to paro. What relevance does that have? Therefore, the malachim are inferior to Klal Yisrael in interpreting the Torah. On the contrary, why should that be so? That part I didn't figure out. But now we want to extract from this whole sugya in Shabbos an interesting phrase that has halachic implications of great significance. So let's take a look at the Gemara in Brachos, Yuma, Kedushin, and Me'ila. All four Gemaras are coming to teach us the same principle. And that principle is something that jumps out of the pages of the sugya that we started with in this debate between the Malachim and Klal Yisrael. Itmar. The Gemara is addressing the following issue. One of the barriers or impediments to tefillah on a halachic level that prohibit me from praying is what's called erva. Erva means when a private part of the body is exposed. So the Gemara vacillates back and forth. When is this, you know, under what circumstances am I enjoined from praying because of erva? There's one discussion where he's holding on to his erva. He's touching his erva. There's another discussion where everything's covered, but he can look down and see his erva because there's no belt, you know, separating the top part of his body from the second part of the body. And at the end of the day, the Gemara says that according to Rava, in a case of Roes and Erva, Mutter, he's allowed to daven. I'll just read to you the relevant line in the Sugya. We're not going to go through the whole Sugya, but the Gemara says, Nogea Divri HaKol Asur. If he has contact with his Erva, he's not allowed to daven. Roe, but if he only sees his Erva, because there's nothing separating his eyes from his Erva, but his erva is not exposed, is Rava says mut. Why? This is the punchline. Lo nitna Torah la malachi asharis. The Torah wasn't given to the angels in heaven. Hilchasan, therefore, we can pass the malacha that although no gay is also, but Ro is mut. So Rashi points out, lo nitna Torah la malachi asharis, she'en lem erva. Now, it's the whole issue of when you're allowed to daven and when you're not allowed to daven, when you can sing God's praises, when you're not allowed to, when there's an erva. That's irrelevant up there in the world of Malachi Asharis because they don't have an erva. If they had an erva, then the Torah would have to address this issue up in Shamayim as to what constitutes an Erev. But Al Karchanu, but we, that's the way we were built, we as biological beings, Yesh Lanu Erev, we have an Erev. V'ein anu yecholim lishtamer mikol zeh. And if you're talking about not being able to see the Erev, you're asking too much of us by our very nature. In other words, basically what this sugya is teaching us is that the halacha has to fit man and man's needs and his abilities, his capabilities. Man is a limited creature. And lo mitna Torah lo malacha shoyis. We have to deal with the Torah as is. And it's very difficult for us to be so restricted in the case of tefillah that we can't daven, even, you know, like in the old days they would cover themselves with ponchos. Again, that's not the right word.
Robe.
Yeah, robes in a sense, like ponchos that cover the body, and that would be libo rovis erva. They don't have the sophisticated underwear that we have, and so forth and so on. That's called lo nitna Torah lamalachi hashoyis. Let's see if we can give three other examples of lo nitna Torah lamalachi hashoyis. Here's a Gemara in Yuma. Now the Gemara is talking about another problem of davening, not erva, but rather tzoa. And once again, you have to understand that in the time of the Chazal, they weren't as sophisticated as we are in getting rid of tzoa. So if you relieve yourself, what we call gdolim, then you know some bit of tzoa might be left in the area. So you have to absolutely clean it out in order to daven or to recite Kriyat Shema in this case. So the Gemara says tzoa b'mkoma, if there's residue of feces in the anal area, is also likros Kriyat Shema. You're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema. Hechi domi. The Gemara says ida nireis, if you see it, pshita. Okay, for sure he has to remove it. But ida lo nireis, but if he can't see it, is lo nitna Torah l'malach yashoreis. You know, how can you expect him to be aware of the, you know, of the tzoa when he's a human being and he doesn't see it? So the Gemara says, Lotzricha, what's the case where tzoa b'mkomos l'krosa, the yoshev v'nireis, omed v'eino nireis? In other words, if he was standing, then he wouldn't be aware of it. But when he's sitting in the couch, you know, in that position, he becomes aware of the tzoa. So the Gemara asks, U'maishna mitzoa al besoro. What about a case where the tzoa is not located in the anal area, but it's on some other part of his body? Let's say it fell on his leg or something like that. The itmai tzal b'soro o shahayu yadav v'beis hakise rav huna amar mutal likros kriyat shema. Rav Chizkiya amar also likros kriyat shema. But at least according to Rav Huna, you're allowed to recite kriyat shema. And the Gemara answers, v'mkoma, if the tzoa is trapped, you know, in between his buttocks, you know, it's in a very tight area, nafish zuama, it gives a very repulsive smell. It has a foul odor because it's not really exposed to the air. But shilovim kom, if it lands on part of his body, lo nafish zuama, it's not so repulsive, it's not so, such a foul odor. But what's important for us here is, again, we see another example of lo nitna Torah l'malachi hashoreis. And that which we can't see, we don't have to be aware of it, unless it has a foul odor. Here's another example of sugya in Kiddushin. Again, the same principle, lo nitna Torah l'malachi hashoreis. It's amazing how many different halachas depend on this principle. Omar Rav, chazanu al kol atzdodim shel Rabbi Meir, v'lo matzinu hegdesh b'shogeg, b'shogeg eino mischal b'meizid mischalel. So we're talking about monies that were designated for the Beis HaMikdash. That's what's called Kedushas Domim. Domim means, let's say, a certain currency, a certain value, and that value, that currency is designated as Hegdesh. And the law is that if he deliberately uses this money, let's say he takes the money of Hegdesh, and he goes into a store, and he purchases something, then the law is mischalel, that the use of the money, which is called me'ilah, desecrates or removes the status of the Hegdish as Hegdish. It's called Nischalel. And from now on, the Mos have the same status as any Mos Shel Chulin. Oh. So now, we have a principle called B'shogeg Eino Mischalel. That if he didn't realize that these Mos were Mos of Hegdish, and he went into a store with these Mos and he purchased something, he made a purchase with these Mos Shel Hegdish, so he was a Shogeg, right? He wasn't intentional. Is Eino Mischalel. It doesn't generate a din of chulin. So I'll read to you one paragraph here in the English translation. He says the following. He says that Hegdish funds are not deconsecrated, that's called Mischal, through unknowing misappropriation. But the Mezid, Mischalel, if he deliberately misappropriated the Mos, then they are deconsecrated. They lose their status as Hegdish. This is all according to Rabbi Meir, who holds that as a general rule, when you use Hegdish, whether it's deliberately or unwittingly, for purchase, the Hegdish becomes deconsecrated, and the transaction is valid, right? Because once it's Mischal Mos, the Mos belong to you and not to Hegdish, and therefore if you pay for something, that transaction is valid. U'mishnas Seinu, and our Mishnah, in which Rabbi Meir ruled that if a man is Mekadish and Isha with Hegdish, lo avi kedushin, the kedushin are not valid. Why not? We just finished saying that if you use Hegdish funds, then the Hegdish is mischala. So he used it for his own purposes as kesef kedushin. It should be mischala. And the answer is that our Mishnah is referring to kasnos kahuna shelo balu. The Kohanim, when they did the Avodah amongst the various begadim that they had to wear, the big kahuna, they wore a ktonis. In English, it's called a tanik. It covers most of the body. And now, when he accidentally misuses it, let's say for a minute he didn't realize that these were ktonos shel hegdish, they were big kahuna, and he gave it to a woman. Hoel v'nitnu lehanas bahen. Since the whole purpose of this beged, of this garment, is for the kohen to benefit from it, and therefore, what are you going to say? You're going to say that you can only benefit from it when you're wearing it at the Shas Avodah. What happens? He finishes the Avodah. He immediately has to strip himself naked or take off the bigdei kuna. He's lo nitna torah lemalach yasharis. The kohenim are human beings with a limited, limitations of being finite beings, and they cannot avoid being nana from the ktones, and therefore there's no din of misappropriation here of meila, and therefore if they were accidentally used to be ma'aris and isha for kedushin, then it's not mischal, and if it's not mischalel, then it doesn't belong to them, and therefore the Kiddushin are not valid. Here's another application of the rule of Ein HaTorah Nitna L'Malachei Asharis. It means the Kohanim cannot be considered like Malachim. You can't demand of them and expect of them to omit, to abstain from absolute benefit from the begadim that they wear. So again, if the Kohen were to decide he wants to use this ksonis for his own purposes, he's not doing the avodah, he needs to warm himself up, that would be an iser me'ila. And in such a case, the ktones would be yotze l'chulin. And if he gave it to a woman for kedushin deliberately, knowing full well it's a ktones, the kedushin would be valid. However, in the case where the Kohen simply finished his Avodah and he got some benefit from the Ksonis or warmed him up before he got a chance to change it to his regular ordinary workday clothes, then there's no Me'ilah, and therefore the status of the Ketonis remains consecrated and it belongs to Hegdish, and if he gave it for a woman for Kedusha Isha, it's not valid. And all this is based on the principle of Lo Nitna Torah Lemalachi Asharis. Now we have another case of Lo Nitna Torah. Me'ila Daf Yudalit Amid Beis. Rav Papa Omar Hainu Taima Dibonin Bichol. It means that when we hire workers to build, let's say the Beis HaMikdash, for example, we use bricks that are not consecrated, that are not Hegdish. Why? Because Lo Nitna Torah Lemalachi Asharis. Dilma Boil Mizga Vizogale. Maybe they need a place to lean or to sit down, and they'll lean or sit down on these bricks that they're working with, because the human being is limited. He's it's Gan Shaykh. It's very possible that he's going to use these bricks for his own purpose. So therefore, don't be magnish them, because if you magnish them, if you take it from Hegdesh, then at least on a shogeg level, the person who's building will violate the Issa Me'ila. So to avoid that, they took Menachol. Let's see if we could read the English translation here. What daf is it? Yudalit Amid Beis, right?
Yeah.
He says the following. Rav Papa says the reason why when they build the structure of the Mikdash, they use chol, non-sacred materials, is because Lo Nitna Torah, the Torah is not given l'malachei asharis, but to human beings who cannot possibly avoid all benefit from the materials in the course of their work. Perhaps a worker will need them to lean on something while he's working. He'll lean on these stones that belong to Hegdesh. So if we build with sacred materials with Hegdesh, shall be found to have committed Me'ila. Inadvertently, he did Me'ila. We want to avoid that. So to prevent that, they decided that they would use materials for the temple construction that are left unconsecrated until the work is complete. It's only after the Mikdash was complete and there was no problem of Me'ila, that's when it was consecrated. So the Aruch HaShulchan, who lived approximately 120 years ago, and he was still alive in the 20th century, and he wrote a compendium of codes on Shulchan Aruch. It's massive. Actually, I'm reminding myself now, I better get a hold of it, because I'm supposed to give a shiur on Wednesday night for Tu B'Shvat about Mitzvah Tlis Baretz, and the Aruch HaShulchan is a great source for that. Anyway, so he wants to know what's the halacha of looking through a microscope. Why is that halachically relevant? So he reports that the scientists, when they look through a microscope, they realize that vinegar is full of toloi, of different creatures. Usually toloi means worms. I don't know if here we're talking about worms in the classical sense. So the Aruch HaShulchan comments that chometz is ein chashad. You don't have to worry in the case of vinegar, because toloi misavim betolush hitira Torah. In other words, this vinegar might have toloi in it, but it came after it was already vinegar. However, he says, but what about water? Water, for example, rainwater is already, even before it's talush, already has bruim mole. You want to underline these words? Mole bruim dakim. They're absolutely saturated with little creatures, little amoebas. I don't know. She'ena ayin yichol l'rosa, which you cannot see with the naked eye. Ubi Aldusi, and when I was young, he says, Shamati mipi echad shahayu b'merchakim, I heard from someone who traveled very far abroad, v'roh derech tukusus, he saw through a microscope, ad ma'od, it was very sharp, you know, like an electroscanning microscope, it multiplies by 100,000 times, shahaya Kirvados pa'amim b'mayim kol mini bruin. He saw tens of thousands of creatures that live in the water. Is echanu shosim mayim? How can we drink water? Hare elu abruim nishavu b'makorom. These bruim are generated in their original natural habitat. It's not like the case of vinegar where the tolon came from the outside. The Torah never prohibited that which is invisible. Again, applying that very same rule that the Torah is not given to malachim. You know, we're finite beings. You can tell us, you know, you could mandate us on what we see and what we're capable of seeing. But we don't have to run around our whole life with a microscope. Diem lokein, hare kama me'achokrim kosmu shigam kol ha'avir moli brud dakim adakim. Even the air itself that we breathe is not just pure oxygen, it's made up also of many different creatures. Uksha'adam poseach piv, when a man opens his mouth, wow, he's not even breathing the air in, but he's opening his mouth. Im kein, bolea kama mehem, he definitely will swallow some of these, the myriad of very small dakim and adakim creatures that are in the air. And he, lechori, is violating the iser of eating shkatzim v'ramasim, eating tolon. Elevadai, the answer to this must be, the hevel yiftapir. We assume that whenever you open the air, all you're getting is hevel. You're not getting bruim. You're not swallowing creatures. V'af im kenu. And even if he is swallowing creatures, kevan she'ena ayin sholet b'hem. Since the eye cannot see them, they're not visible to the naked eye. Lav klubu. The Torah doesn't consider them anything. So this is fascinating because in modern contemporary halacha, we have many, many cases where things that we breathe and we eat are now, through the advancements in science and microscopes, electroscanning microscopes, etc., we can begin. Now we also have X-rays, so you can begin to see things which are not visible to the naked eye, and they're living creatures, and we're eating them. It's like, for example, you have an issue with certain fish that they discovered that there are small creatures that, you know, live inside the fish or attach themselves to the fish. Or strawberries, you know, you have bugs in strawberries. And now, I don't see these bugs, but you know, if you look in a microscope, you'll see these bugs. So some people don't eat strawberries, but at least the Aruch HaShulchan for his part, he says that which is invisible is not halachically to be considered. Why not? Because lo nitna Torah l'malachi asharis. And if there was any one posek who really took this whole issue by the horns, it's Rav Moshe Feinstein, which you'll see on the other side of your page. Oh, by the way, the Aruch HaShulchan warns us that during the summer months, when we go down to various swamp areas and wells and springs and so forth, that very often, because of the heat, there are certain very small tolon, very small zvuvim, that generate in these water ponds areas, these marsh, you know, marshlands. Yesh li zor l'saninis amayim v'masaninis dakum and adaka. Get yourself a sieve that's very, you know, that you know, it's almost impossible for anything to get through. He says even rainwater during the summer is misravim bem zvuvim ktanim to parchim biavir. Very small creatures like mosquitoes, who knows what. And yesh li zor lolish tosam, the people will bend down and they'll drink the water. So, you know, we'll tell them, oh, it's natural water and so on, but what's inside the water? And he says that if you were to sift this water, you would actually see these creatures. So they're not invisible to the naked eye, they're not microscopic. That's really interesting. The lady folk used to actually sift the water that they used for matzah, erev Pesach, because they felt maybe there's something chametzik in the water. So we'll make sure. So too, he says, during the summer months, it's a real problem with these wells and wet areas, that if people bend down and bow down and drink the water, they may be eating tolon that can be seen. But there are certain wells and springs which are very deep below the surface of the ground. There, you don't have to worry about these creatures. Now, in the Tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein, somebody asked him, as far as determining the death of a human being, which is relevant to, whether we have to give him treatment anymore and put him on a respirator or tracheotomy or whatever, machines. It's also relevant to whether we can take his organs and save someone else's life with them. So he says, Harofim, they determined about this, again, we'll give one example, but it's a whole category, that he no longer breathes on his own. But the question is if his heart is pumping. And Roim Tkuvos Halev be electric radiogram, radiogram, some sort of an X-ray where you can see with this X-ray that there are electrical pulses in the heart. Lomar, shall we assume that ain't a klum? The Torah, the Halacha doesn't recognize these discoveries about this being, this human being, based on machinery. V'nechshav kemes, and we can determine that he's dead. Im ach hifsik lincham, as soon as he stops breathing. So the one who asked this question, Dima, he thought that I have a perfect solution to this, a perfect analogy. Shemutarim lechol kol dvarim sheniskhamtu afshiyedu shemachmitzim is al yedei toloim sheromos on the microscope. Vipnei shatora lo osra el toloim shkotzim emosim sheniru la'ayin. So he quotes a whole group, a whole cadre of poskim who say that the Torah never prohibited very small, invisible toloim and shkatzim, meaning the Torah doesn't recognize and validate anything that we can't see with our eye. And if we apply that to the pulses, the electric pulses that go that in the heart that can only be seen with the help of these technologies, like X-rays and the like. What do they call that today? Not X-rays. The X-rays are going out of style.
MRI.
No, what's it called?
Ultrasound.
That's it. The ultrasound. The ultrasound is such a simple procedure, but you'll see things that you can't see with the naked eye. So should we assume this guy is still alive? Halachically, we can't. We have to put him on life support machines. Why? Because in this, through the process of looking microscopically, we can determine that there's some activity in the heart. And he says, Niru, he says that all these poskim quote the Dayan of Brisk, his name was Rav Simcha Zelig, who quotes Rav Chaim, the Rav of Brisk, who says that we don't have to worry about certain toloim and shkotzim or mosim that are not visible to the eye. He says he didn't have to quote the case of something that fermented. He didn't have to go, stretch his arm out all the way to breads that were fermented or whatever was fermented. Well, why not take the case of the air that we breathe? With every breath, he swallows thousands of creatures for ulai milyonim, maybe millions of creatures. Ubehechrech, and we have no choice but to say she'eino v'chalal shkotzim v'remosim sh'nesra Torah. He gives an example in the name of the first Rebbe of Chabad, you know, the Reb Shnei Zalman, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch Rav, in terms of a woman who's, you know, who has a cloth, and you know, if you look at the cloth under a microscope, you'll find down, but it's not visible to the naked eye. So the Alter Rebbe paskin, and in such case, it's not metamet. Well, for example, you know, the tefillin has to be perfectly square, without any pegimos, any nicks. And if you look at your tefillin with a microscope, you'll probably find some nicks, or a sakin l'shchita, you know, a knife of shchita. If you're going to check your sakin with a microscope, that's why I'm a little confused about, you know, when you go to buy dalet minim, like they look at the esrog, they put on this magnifying glass, you know, what they can see. I don't know exactly according to what he's saying here in the name of the Alter Rebbe, what difference it make if you use a microscope? If you can't see it, then it's not a problem. He says Shagamkin Hudin Boru Poshul Oshachlis Tapik Vi Afsh Anachnu Ktane Ktanim Yodanu Zel Dor Posh saying Zotlif Nib. We were never bothered by this question. Lo Husker Zeb Gemara, even though, you know, the Gemara doesn't talk about this explicitly, but Kol Ador Sakshir Magonim Atzadim Chasidim, all the generations going back are made up of Gaonim, of geniuses and tzaddikim. Shalosh Tam Shuv Microscope, that they never used the microscope. So how did they know, you know, that there isn't a problem here, Beimet Meir? So what are you going to say about all the Hasidim, the Tanoim, the Amoroim that came before us, and they didn't have these Kalim, you know, these techniques, this technology? So you're going to say that Nikshalu, by, you know, the Nikshalu, they violated all these Isurim? So that's for sure. And you don't have to quote the case of Chometz or Toloim and this. A microscope, that's for sure. That which you cannot see, upgrade. It's poshut, there's no question about it. It's not awesome. But, he says, L'damos l'zeh chashivus misa di'onam. Now you want to make an analogy and jump over to the case of, is this man alive or dead? Lomar. And you want to tell me, sh'av sh'roim arofal yidei electric diagram, or I guess he means some sort of
ECG machine.
They're able to see that the heart is still alive, and then you're going to tell me it's nechshav lemes, he's considered dead. That far, I'm not willing to go.
I'm just thinking about matzah. Like, we're very madaiac now to time everything with stopwatches and this and that, but obviously that's not something the way we used to make matzah. We didn't have such precise timekeeping devices. Right.
That's for sure. So again, he's making a distinction between little bugs and all that stuff, or a little nick in the tefillin or in the sakin shel shechita, all that. You know, you can't tell me that we're going to have to look with a microscope. That's not how the Torah about. But, he says, if you know that through a microscope that a person is still alive, and his heart is still emitting some sort of electrical impulses or whatever it is, the heart is not completely dead, then how can you claim the person is dead? Now, he quotes Siman Lamed Beis, that's the famous Siman Arachaim about tefillin, that require ribua, that it has to be absolutely square, became a mechuvah to arko kerochvo. I said the length and the width are all equal. Kadeshi elem oso alakson, and is the same, you know, diameter all over the place. Amru chazal kol amsa biribua amsa utre. Okay, so this is about pi. Right, it's what we call an irrational number. You could never actually get it, you know, perfectly. it's an infinite number, I think. I think they consider anything beyond 27 digits already considered infinity. That certainly we have to be machshir tefillin even with this ribua. Alright, there's a lot more here. I just want to point out to you that this whole discussion about using various technologies and determining halacha based on, he says, has tremendous bearing on the status of microphones, because that's also a technique. So if you take a look here on the left side, he says, "L'mistavelach shivo shomea." What about a person who has a little microphone in his ear, right? What are they called? Hearing aids or something along that, for someone who's hard of hearing. So to tell me that's called shmia, as if he actually hears it, where naturally, in and of himself, without this technology, very sophisticated technology, he can't hear. The shmiya kshavidavram lo b'kol ram u'kahod the shmiya al yidei. Oh, the Gemara has cases where he can hear by putting in something in his ear. Pasha dechol in yonei atorah nidonu kefishem roim v'shomim v'etzem v'lo al yidei mechonos. As we look at man before the invention of various technologies and machines, and if man as such is not capable of hearing, unfortunately, then that's he's an eino shomea.
Kriyat shofar, he shouldn't wear his hearing aid to shul.
The shofar? No, I think he's saying that you would not be yotzei shofar through a hearing aid, because what happens is the technology will change the nature of the voice or the sound waves. So you're not really hearing the shofar itself; you're hearing something like an echo of the shofar that's produced, the sound that's produced by the shofar. And he says that just like we said lakula, that you're allowed to breathe air even though it's full of shrotzim, even though you can see those shrotzim through a microscope, so too in the flip side, we have to be machmir, and we have to prohibit listening to the shofar, or for that matter, any mitzvah that requires shmia, through some sort of a hearing aid that's electrical and creates impulses, and it's a result of modern technology. No, we always go back to man himself. What is man in and of himself? Is he a shomea or is he not a shomea? I mean, this has tremendous repercussions. I mean, we'd have to go through the tshuva at great length. Our purpose in this year was only to give an idea of how the Torah was given to man, not to the Malach Asharis, with all the Beis HaLevi's insights that we saw. And not only that, the Halach is predicated on the fact that we are not infinite beings, that man is a finite being. And the Halach will reflect that in many different areas. Lo nit nitar la Malach Asharis. Okay, we'll stop here.